Okay, I'll call over to the conference committee meeting on Senate File 1530 for May 12th, 2004. We have a side-by-side comparison of the language as it passed from the Senate and passed from the House. I've asked counsel if we could briefly go through the bill and identify the major differences between the two bills. We also have a proposal that we would like to make that kind of merges some of the amended common elements between the two, but we'll talk about that after we go through the bill. So, Mr. Pinoff, could you go through this bill?
Sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, the first thing will be on page R1. You see on the Senate side, 1.23 to 1.24, you have that the sanctuary has to be accredited by the American Sanctuary Association or the Association of Sanctuaries. That's not on the House side. The other difference you see on page R1 is just the title of what you call the animals that you're regulating. In the Senate, it's prohibited animal, and on the House side, it's a regulated animal. And there are a number of places, I'm not necessarily going to talk about each of those places, but on the bottom of page R1, there is a difference in the days on 2.25 on the House, excuse me, on the Senate. It's 90 days. On 2.23 of the House bill, it's 120 days to come into compliance after the effective date of the regulations. So, and then on page R2, the large difference here is that if you look at paragraph D, the Senate says a person must not accept as provided in paragraph E, and the House says only a person who possesses a valid USDA license is allowed to breed. But then in the exception in paragraph E, the House also has a provision saying that if the USDA license, you can have the animals. It wasn't clear to me whether E was supposed to be an exception to that, or if you could do it under either paragraph D or E on the House side. On the Senate side, it just says the person must not accept as provided. Now, the Senate language on 3.9 says maintain the number of prohibited animals, and on the House side, it's maintain their inventory in 3.8-3.9. And further below on the House side, it does say maintaining their inventory defines that term and allows up to 125% of the number of regulated animals at the time of registration. On the Senate side, it just says maintain the number, and then offspring under 6 months of age shall not be counted. And then the other difference here is who they can sell to. If you look at 3.14 on the Senate side, it says sell prohibited animals to persons eligible under paragraph F. On the House side, we've got the same as clause 2. It's organized a little different here, where they can sell to licensed facilities. Of course, the Senate side, it says for replacement purposes. It doesn't say that on the House side. But then it also says to persons registered under this section or to exempt facilities. That language is not contained on the Senate side. It doesn't say to, it just says that except as provided. You can do it as provided in paragraph F. And then in paragraph F, you have this is where people who are not USDA licensed can acquire. It says that on the Senate side, you can purchase an animal or prohibit an animal to replace one that exists if it dies. But you can only do it once. The House also says you can only do it once, but it's limited to tigers or lions on 3.19 on the House side. And in paragraph G, my understanding is identical. Subdivision 3 and registration, the registration form on the Senate side says prepared by the local animal control authority, 3.30 to 3.31. On the House side, it's prepared a registration form approved by the Board of Animal Health. And then there is just a slight difference in the Senate uses shall and the House uses must on line 3.30 on the House side. Otherwise, as my understanding is identical. And then paragraph B, the bottom page R2, it's the same. The big thing is on the top of page R3. The Senate has some additional language not contained in the House bill. It starts on 4.8. If a prohibited animal is sedated for any reason, the animal does not have a microchip, the microchip must be implanted. And then within 30 days after you have to put in the information. And then it also says that a person selling or transferring ownership of offspring under 6 months of age, they're encouraged to have the microchip implanted. And then within 30 days of acquisition, the person acquiring one that has an implanted chip must comply with the microchip information reporting requirements. On paragraph C on the Senate side, the Senate leaves the fee up to the local animal controller authority and says charge a reasonable fee. The House stipulates what the fees are. You can read there on the House side for the specific items. And then it also has a sentence at the end that says a certificate of registration must be issued by the local animal control authority to the person upon payment of the fee. In subdivision 4, dealing with requirements, the first paragraph is generally the same, my understanding, except for, of course, the name of the animal. Well, it does have for 5 years for the life of the animal. I guess there is a difference. I didn't note that on mine. The House says they must maintain the records for 5 years, and the Senate says that they must maintain them for the life of the animal. And then paragraph B on the Senate side actually lines up with paragraph C on the House side. And it's my understanding that is essentially the same. Paragraph B on the House side is something that's not on the Senate side. It says the person who possesses a regulated animal must maintain an ongoing program of veterinary care, which includes a visit to the premises at least annually. On the Senate side, the paragraph C that's there is not on the House side. It says a person with a USDA license for prohibited animals shall forward a copy of their USDA inspection report to the local animal control authority within 30 days of receipt of the inspection report. That's again not on the House side. And as that brings us down to paragraph D, and the major difference there is that the Senate requires the sign to be at each entrance of the premises, and the House says that it must display a sign on the enclosure where the animal is housed. And so it's a little bit different than how that works. Paragraph E is my understanding that's essentially the same. I don't think there's any differences in that, of course, the name of the animal. Paragraph F is a little bit different. This is where the Senate says, except when a prohibited animal is transported to a licensed veterinarian, if requested, actually, that's right, paragraph F, the two paragraphs F don't really match. They're unique language on the two sides. Paragraph F on the Senate side deals with transporting the animal and says that you must notify the local animal control authority when you're moving the animal, except if you're transporting to a licensed veterinarian. On the House side, you have language that deals with basically that they have to maintain a written recovery plan in case of the escape of the animal, and the person must maintain a tranquilizer, gun, tranquilizers, live draft, whatever is put in necessary for recovery.
On the last paragraph on the Senate side, I think a key thing here is on line 5.11, is you don't have to notify the local authorities unless they request it. If requested by the local animal control authority.
If requested, correct. Yeah. 5.11, right.
The way it used to be is you had to notify, and we added that language for the sheriff or whoever is in charge of the sheriff is notified or not, depending on what you're talking about.
And then page R4, the top, you can see just a continuation of Senate language. And then paragraph G, it's my understanding that that's essentially the same. Now, seizure, paragraph A is not contained in paragraph A is don't really match up. Paragraph A on the House side lines up with paragraph B on the Senate side. The Senate includes language that says that upon issuance of the notice of inspection must be granted access at reasonable times. This is the access for the local animal control authority to the sites where they have reason to believe a violation of this chapter is occurring or has occurred. On paragraph B on the Senate side, It's a little bit different on this is dealing with when they can take possession of the animal, and it says that if the person is not in compliance with the requirements of section 1, shall take possession of the animal. On the House side, it says that if they determine that a person who possesses one or more animals is not in compliance, that they shall provide written notice and warning to the person and commence appropriate actions to seize the animal or animals. So it's a little different, a little bit stronger on the Senate side, that it's that they take possession. And then on paragraph C on the Senate side and B on the House side, the major difference there is that upon request of the person possessing the animal, the local animal may allow the animal. It's on a House side, it's written a little bit different, largely technical, but a person notified by the Animal Control Authority may submit to the Animal Control Authority a written request for a temporary permit to retain custody. Otherwise, I think those sections are essentially the same, just a little bit different on how you get there. There's a couple of technical things on paragraph D. One technical and one not so technical. The Senate just uses the word described, and the House uses the word allowed. But it does say that in the Senate side, it says that if they're not in compliance, the Animal Control Authority shall seize the animal. And in the House side, it says may seize on 5.25. It says may seize the animal. And the other difference is on 5.29 of the House side, it says, and informing the owner by telephone if possible. It was in the Senate side at one point and was taken away. On another difference, now the part down below where you have the notice is structured quite a bit differently. Most of it, the same provisions are in both sides, it's just how they're structured, except on line 5.36, you've got number 4, contact the person and telephone number. The ordering and everything else is a little bit different. I've got the arrows drawn on mine to show where the language is similar, but I just want to say that they're largely technical except for 5.36 on the House side. Again, it's written a little bit different, but I think largely they are essentially the same except for the technical differences in how they're drafted. And then on page R5, we've got 6.27, the Senate says makes a request, and on the House side, you've got makes a written request within five. The House side is 5 days, and the Senate is 5 business days, which would be a different standard. The provisions in 1 and 2 are essentially the same. Slightly different in language. You've got the word bad on the Senate side, technical. On the House side, though, there are some additional items. This is where, this is paragraph F now, if they order, the judge orders permanent disposition of the animal. The Senate side just says it must be placed in a wildlife sanctuary. The House adds, or persons authorized by the Department of Natural Resources or an appropriate USDA licensed facility. And if no such facilities is available for disposition of the animal, the local animal control authority may order the animal to be destroyed. On 7.6 of the Senate, paragraph G, you've got to the extent that a court or hearing officer finds. On the House side, 6.34 says the extent that a judge finds. Otherwise, I think I understand those are otherwise. For example, paragraph H, I think that unless somebody else wants to find something that has that's a fairly significant difference, I think H is essentially the same. On paragraph I, on both sides, the Senate has exigent circumstances exist, and the House says if circumstances exist. On the Senate side, on 7.20, you've got shall seize a prohibited animal. Again, on the House side, you may seize a regulated animal. The House also adds language providing prior notice at the time of seizure or the opportunity. So this says they may seize an animal without providing prior, on the House side, without providing prior notice or notice at the time of seizure. The Senate just says without an opportunity for hearing a court order, which is also in the House side, but they've got additional language that they can do without providing the prior notice. Disposal of the animals, it's my understanding that that's essentially the same. And then the exemption on the bottom page, R5, those are the same. And then the major difference on the exemption, well, there are two differences on the exemption. one in clause five on page R6. The health of a Minnesota licensed or accredited research or medical institution, and on the Senate side, it just says a licensed or accredited research or medical institution. And then on paragraph, or excuse me, clause six, the Senate provision says a USDA licensed exhibitor while transporting or displaying for the animals as part of a temporary circus, carnival, rodeo, or county fair. And the House just has that if you're a circus, carnival, rodeo, or county fair, you're exempt. The report, as I understand it, is essentially the same, and same with the penalty, the same subdivisions.
Thank you, Mr. President. Is there any questions, first of all, on the comparisons or any clarifications that anybody wants in about who goes away on the course? Two versions of the goal on the course. Representative Murphy, by the way, is on the way here and would like to have the opportunity participate. Members, we did have prepared, Mr. Knopf prepared an A13 amendment, and this is a proposal that we would like to make, and we've made it available during the day today, so that we've taken some things from both bills, blended them where we could, tried to make some accommodations given positions on both sides. I think as we understand that when this process started off with bills as introduced, would have grandfathered in individuals who are currently USDA permits, but that would have been it. And those individuals, no other individuals would have been able to have been breeding or buying or selling or owning animals after that. That's the way the bill started. There were alternatives discussed as the session went forward in both bodies, possibly just having simply registration of the animals and no more. What wound up evolving through the process in both bodies was quite a similar, I believe, similar bills, getting at it in different ways, where we do grandfather in, we do allow some limited replacements of the animals. The idea, I guess, here is to ultimately phase out the ownership of the animal. Is that a fair statement?
Over time,
of course, yeah. It's a longer period of time than what we started off with, but the idea of just having a matter of right to own them with minimal registration, I think, was not by the votes accepted in the union body. So I think what we have here, as I say, is fairly close to each other. So that's the A13 amendment. And I can, I know, Mr. Knopf, are you in a position to go through it? I hadn't asked you that earlier. I can start going through it and explain it if you...
Mr. Chair, that's up to you. I have mine marked up as the word provision.
Perhaps you can kind of go through it and identify those areas that were the same in both bills, where there's any deviation, and whether it was a House provision or a Senate provision or a blended one and so forth, if we have the... A13. Does anybody have the A13 amendment?
No.
Do we have any extra ones?
Yeah.
We have extra copies for anybody who hasn't gotten
it.
If it would help to expedite the process, I've had Ms. Jefferson has given me a copy here that she's looked through. Okay. I certainly can't say that it's comprehensive in terms of their issues, but maybe we could just go through and I could do that
okay.
rather than going through the whole bill. I've asked her to say, what exactly are your issues?
I think Senator Deal, I gave them copies of the amendment earlier. They had a couple of questions and they weren't able to... I didn't have the chance to sit down and resolve those issues that they may have. What I would also like to do, if anybody wants to testify, on the amendment that we have before us, give them that opportunity too. But Senator Scaven and Senator Dill, as I said, I didn't have the opportunity to sit down and resolve your issues, but I think you had a couple of things that you wanted to question about. Senator Dill?
Do you want us to do that?
Well, if you've got any questions, if you've had the opportunity to look at it too, maybe you can bring up any issues that you have. So.
Well, one thing I see that we keep using the word dangerous over and over and over and over and over again here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I like that, the use of that word repeatedly. And I've also been referencing this Humane Society analysis of the bill, and they're recommending that we go with the word regulated rather than prohibited, I think. Is that correct?
Well, the Senate used the term prohibited animals.
So we were using the House language.
It's a modified version of the House language. They use the word regulated animal. We sort of came up with a kind of a hybrid definition, just for talking purposes, dangerous regulated. But that wasn't a term used in either bill, but it's probably a little closer to the term that the House was using in their bill.
Well, when I look at it, the way I look at it, Mr. Chairman, members, is that we compromised here on the House language of using the word regulated, but then we added the word dangerous, and I guess that is something I'd like to discuss. I'm questioning whether we need to have that word in there repeatedly. And then I just have some general questions here. When we had hearings in the Senate, there was a question about how this is going to work. The law goes into place, you need to register your animals, you tell the local authorities that you've got 20 animals out there of various types and species and so forth, and then and that's kind of your maximum number allowed, or even maybe increased by 125% depending on which way we go on it. But that's, in the Senate version, you're only reporting the ones that are over 6 months of age. So you've got that number in there. But then the question came up with what happens if you want to change species. You've reported 20 animals, but you may want to have an animal that's not a prohibited animal, that's not a new prohibited animal, and then give up the one that you got. And we don't have any mechanism in there for that, do we?
Just my understanding that the way the Senate worded this, it was a number of animals. And so if you did change species, and there was a concern about some of the conversations with everybody, it was a number of animals, not species.
Okay. And I think what we have in the draft, and Senate language is actually more generous because it does take into account the offspring. Whereas I think the House language was just more of a percentage, and I think so ours is a little bit more workable for those people that are going to be grandfathered or breeding, because it doesn't take that into account. I don't think the House does it as cleanly. So we've tried, I think by adopting that language out of the House, it actually probably more favorable to those who have an interest in that.
Okay, well, that makes you feel better about that. Then, Mr. Chairman, members, the other thing I want to ask about are zoos or people with small displays of animals. If they're not USDA licensed at this point in time, they can get USDA licensed under the bill, I think, right? And they can continue to operate.
Well, there's correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Chairman. There's sort of a two-tiered matter. People who are USDA, have a USDA permit by the effective date of this bill, are going to have a different status than people who do not have a USDA permit. Petting zoos are still going to be allowed 100 years from now under this. It is going to, however, limit some of the types of animals that might be allowed at petting zoos. A pet tiger might be allowed. Ultimately, I mean, the replacement is still in this bill to allow for that, but ultimately the primates, the large Felidae type of cats would not be allowed as petting zoos down the road under this proposal.
Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, are those small petting zoos, do they have to become USDA licensed?
No.
They just have to be registered.
Currently, currently, the federal law states that anybody exhibiting animals needs to be USDA licensed. So current people that are exhibiting animals that are exotic already need to hold that USDA license to legally exhibit those animals.
Mr. Chairman. What about, like, now, there's a couple of zoos, like Oxbow and Little Falls Zoo and stuff like that. What is that going to do with these zoos? Is that going, I know there was a question about that in the Senate part of it, is that those zoos would be eventually put out of business now. Is that going to be taken care of here?
I don't know that the first, Ms. Post, could you respond?
Yes, sir. I think, again, what we need to look at is that this bill addresses very specific categories of animals, like the tigers, the primates, the bears. So zoos that are zoos house numbers up to 300 different species, so we're talking about three categories. In addition, most of those zoos also hold game licenses, which exempt the bear, the cougar, the lynx, the bobcat. So that's another way that works with this. So we're limiting a very small number, and again, if they're already licensed, whatever breeding stock they have now, they can continue to breed and exhibit, or if they have an animal die, they can replace it with another tiger. So they will always have a tiger to have there. They just might not have the numbers to sell to individuals as pets in the future.
I need to get the members questions answered first. So, Representative Wiener.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I know that, but essentially what it will do is Little Falls Zoo and that essentially will not have tigers or whatever after a while. Is because I know this was a very distinct question at the Senate hearings and that was a real question from these zoos is, you know, they're going to be losing the availability of those animals, whereas the Minnesota Zoo is still going to be able to have them, but Little Falls would not.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lindgren, yes. Aren't they USDA licensed, though?
Chairman. There was something about the Little Falls Zoo, about the rating that they have, is that they would not be able to continue.
Mr. Chairman, they are not AZA accredited, which is a full exemption in the bill like the Minnesota Zoo, but they are USDA, so they are regulated here, and that answer to your question is determined upon how they manage their collection. If they have tigers right now that they want to breed and keep and maintain or trade a species, as long as they keep the number of animals, they can continue to do that, but I can't answer that based on, I don't know how, if they wanted to trade 300 animals tomorrow to get 300 tigers, to maintain that inventory, 300 leopards or 300 tigers, they could. If they decide to deplete all their exotic and then try and replenish it, it all depends on how they manage that, but they do have the flexibility within this bill.
One more question.
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
But under this, when their animals die out, will they still be able to replace them?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, if you look on page 2 of the A13 amendment, this paragraph E, if the person who possesses a valid USDA license and is in compliance on the effective date of this section may breed, purchase, or otherwise acquire new dangerous animals in order to and then maintain the number and then sell them to other USDA licensed compliant facilities, so they would be able to maintain the number. They just couldn't go up in number. But then, of course, we don't count the offspring under 6 months. But as far as the adult animals, they can maintain that same number.
Sir Dilbert, do you have any other questions?
Well, I've also read most of this Humane Society report here on their suggestions, and there are some suggestions I think we should consider. And I haven't marked it all up yet, but that's, I think what we need to do is go to this gentleman over here.
Well, I want to get the members' question that's for Circus Gator.
Chairman, I also had noted the change from exotic animal to dangerous animal, and I just would be curious to understand the thinking on that. But let me ask some questions on page 5. The sections, lines 6 through 12, I find very hard to understand. It may be the way it's worded. Except when a dangerous regulated animal is transported to a licensed veterinarian, if requested by the local animal control authority, a person may not move. It's hard to understand. So I think that section needs to be written And then the second thing that triggered then in my mind is you notify the local animal control authority prior to moving the animal. I am sorry to say I'm not familiar with all the different places where we have animal control authorities, but it occurs to me if it's county-based, you could be moving an animal a great distance. Which animal control authority is to be notified? Are both, or I'm not clear there. I'm confused there. So that was one place. This whole section, I think, is lacks some clarity for me. And then I've got another set of questions on that same page. But
this was Senate language. I can explain it as this was something obviously that evolved in the committee process, which should be apparent. Right now, the animal control authorities have absolutely no idea what animals are out there or where they are. Originally, the language that we have proposed would have required that if the animal is going to be taken off site, moved around, whatever, like even bring them to a mall, the animal control authority should know if the tiger is looking or whatever is being moved. Some people thought that was too onerous, that because some of these animals are moved around quite frequently and they didn't want to have to seek permission each and every time. So, and of course, especially if the animal is bringing to a veterinarian, does the animal control authority need to be notified of that? So, I mean, those are some of the many components that went into this. I think what we're trying to get at is that if we're changing the destination, if the animal is in one place and the destination is going to be in a different place and the animal is going to be, say, permanently placed in a different place, how do we notify and under what circumstances do it rather than every time that the animal is going to be off-site, so to speak. So that was kind of it. And the language may not reflect it, but of course that's, again, how the Senate Agriculture Committee wound up resolving the issue with their various language. Mr. Kranoff, did you?
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, some of this was kind of shoehorned in a little bit. I mean, there were different ideas floating around. You know, one of the ways to take care of the issues, I'll just throw out a couple of things that you could do if you wanted to, is instead on line 6 and 7, delete except when a dangerous animal is transported to a licensed veterinarian, and just add a sentence below that says this paragraph does not apply to dangerous regulated animal transported to a licensed veterinarian. And I think that would probably make it a little clearer. So then you'd start out if requested and then just say that they don't apply. There's a couple different ideas going on here at the same time. And then on the local animal control authority on lines 9 and 10, it was the intent that it would be the one that the animal is registered with. And you could add language to specify that because these animals will be registered and you could specify that.
There's two separate issues here. One is the veterinarian, and I think you could exempt that. One thing that I don't think is an issue, and I think the senator's trying to get to, we need to know where it is. It's somewhere for a long time, but I'm assuming that a lot of these animals are going out, all the time for different things, for appearances, perhaps we can just give the animal control authority the authority to issue a blanket, if you're going within 100 miles of here, and it's for an exhibition, we don't need to be notified every single time.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Strachan?
Strachan.
The way I understand how this would work is, and Senator Dill worked on this in committee, is if requested by the local animal control authority, so they only have to notify when that local animal control authority requests it. That they do that, and it could be on a case-by-case basis, or it could be a kind of a general authority to do that. It doesn't specify, so we'll leave it up to the local animal control authority on how that's handled.
If that's clear to everyone, because I'm just thinking there may be a lot of trips, and I think they're thinking that they have to notify every single time.
I think if Senator Cascade found language somewhat confusing, I'm sure the people who are out there who are not being given this explanation might have found it equally confusing, so we may have to look at how we can tighten up the language so we can make sure that the intent is done here. This was a committee rewrite, and that it probably is reflecting that at the moment. Yes. Circus King, do you have another?
And then, Mr. Chairman, the sense on, I just want to be sure I'm understanding. If you're transporting an animal from one local animal control authority's jurisdiction to another, so, in other words, maybe you're moving the animal for a prolonged not just an appearance, but they either sold the animal, they're transporting the animal as a new, moving to a new sanctuary, or it's stayed someplace for a period of time. I mean, I'm not quite understanding the relationship between one local animal control authority and another. So if you move an animal from Little Falls to Oxbow Park, I think that's the park in my district that you were referencing, does the local animal control authority there need to be notified?
I may have misspoke about how we got there. The bill originally would have required every single time that the animal is brought to a school, to a mall, to a park, for whatever purpose, the animal control authority would have to be notified. I think the language here represents the Senate Ag Committee's desire to say, well, if the animal control authority wants to know that, then the animal control authority can require it. If that's not something the animal control authority wants to know about, cares about, you know, then it can be done. But if the animal control authority says, I want to know if that pet tiger is being brought to a school, then they would have to so notify the animal control authority.
Mr. Chairman, that part I understood your explanation. I guess I'm asking a different question.
Okay.
The language triggers a different question in my mind. And maybe it's answered elsewhere in the bill. If you are, say you're sending an animal to a different location for an extended period of time, did the animal control authority in the new location need to be notified, or they notified to someone? If you sell an animal to a or if you are trying to think of some example where you might, the one that occurs to me is a zoo. So currently an animal's moved from one county to another and it's going to reside there for a period of time. Who notifies the local animal control authority of that? Or is that just within the licensed capacity of that particular location? Or is that a concern?
Right. The animal control authority has the control of the jurisdiction, whether that's sort of countywide or whatever. So it is the responsibility, and I may have to find it where it is in the bill, where if you have one of those animals, you have the responsibility of notifying the animal control authority that you have that animal. So if you move out of one jurisdiction and bring an animal to another, because that's, you just have to move, and I don't know if somebody can point me to where it says that or implies that, or do we need to tighten up the language to say that you have that affirmative duty to do that. Page 3, what is it?
Mr. Chairman, it's also on page 1 line. It's part of it, the possession.
I'm sorry, Mr. Rankin, what page?
Page 1.
Line?
Line 19 and 20. 19? This okay. Is the possession.
Ah, okay. Well, that's okay. And then where would the affirmative duty be to make sure that if you move in, if you... let's see. Page 3, line 17. Okay, within 60 days, a person possesses a dangerous must notify in writing, shall include a person's name and number and so forth. I guess it doesn't talk about how if you move into the area, you also need to do this as well, too. Perhaps, okay, well, we're looking for that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't mean to take you on an area that isn't a big concern. The confusion on the language on page 5 triggered those other questions. And moving on to a new topic, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, sir, just again.
On page 5, starting on line 30, we have, during the 30-day period, the local animal control service shall inspect at any reasonable time. And I guess I'm wondering why it's a shall instead of may. Because now you're putting a duty on local animal control authorities to inspect, and it may not be necessary that it might be a facility that has a really, you know, good record, and they don't have to inspect every time. So I'm just wondering about that. And then
could you just give that citation?
It's on page 5, line 31.
Okay. The landlord shall inspect at any reasonable time. Okay.
Only equipment.
Well, it seems to me there's an inconsistency between shall inspect at any reasonable time. Usually if you have a shall, it would be at any time, the premises, because it's a duty on both. Or it's a may inspect at any reasonable time. See the difference?
Right. Well, this is referring, this is the seizure part, where the animal is actually seized, and I think we do want to make sure that the animal control authority is actually making sure during that time period the animal is seized that the premises is actually inspected. A lot of the language that we have here was taken from dangerous dog seizure provisions, and it could very well be made, but I don't know. I think that we may desire to have the that inspection done during the seizure period. That's the reason I think it was there.
And Mr. Chairman, it seems that you would want to strike the word reasonable on 932.
Show inspect.
If the purpose is to make sure that the animal is now being well cared for during this time when it's been seized and you've extended it,
right,
then it would seem like you would want to allow inspection at any time.
Well, yeah, I don't know that we still want the government to show up in the middle of the night to say we're allowed to do an inspection.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's unlikely.
Okay. Now, Urban is wrong.
Mr. Chair, I think if you look back at the beginning of this is a local control issue. If our purpose is to let the local authorities know where they are, give them some authority, they may, under line 27, may allow them to go back, and under the same guise, they may choose to inspect. And I think we believe that reasonable and I think may is a good idea.
Okay.
Because that, again, that's the animal control authority. Give them the authority to do it.
Chairman Senator Kiskeen, I did find the provision I was looking for on when they changed. On page 4, line 17, the paragraph C, the person who possesses a dangerous regulated animal must notify the local animal control authority in writing within 10 days of a change in address or location where the dangerous animal is kept. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Although it's a working document, Mr. Kiskeen, maybe we should probably try to clean up some things if we seem to have a consensus on them as we go along. Is that,
Mr. Chairman, I would feel more comfortable with me instead of shell on
931. Okay. On the document 813, Mr. Kiskeen moves on page 5, line 31, changing the word shell to may. Is there discussion on that? Anyone else in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Secretary State.
Mr. Chairman, I'm moving to page 6.
Page 6.
These notice provisions, there's two things that trigger my mind about the notice provisions starting on line 2. The authority taking custody shall provide a notice by delivering or mailing to the owner, by posting at the place where the animal is taken, or by delivering it to a person residing on the property. Is there not a difference between it? Is there? This is a sort of question. Is the person who possesses the animal always the owner, or are there situations where people have animals that they own that are in the possession of another sanctuary or another? It was my impression in one of the animal sanctuaries in my part of the state, there was the owners of the sanctuary possessed animals that were actually owned by others. They provided care for those animals in their sanctuary, but they didn't own them. So if an animal was seized that was in the possession of the sanctuary, but not owned by the sanctuary, I wondered about notice to the actual owner.
That's
sort of like how you stable horses. There are people who stable cats. Why don't people get stable cats? You know what I mean?
I don't know the answer. Okay. The notice here is certainly to some contact person. If it's not clear, who the owner is, and of course, in some instances that may be difficult to do. I think this provision is intended to at least give some notice to somebody. To make sure that whoever seemed to have the possession of it, whether it was the owner or not, at least is aware of what's going on. If
if you don't actually know who the owner is, how do you track it down? I mean, if the person denies it, I'm not the owner, I'm just taking care of this.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what really triggers that question is the starting on line 11 through 16, the statement that a person from whom a dangerous regular animal sees may post security to prevent disposition of the animal and may request a hearing concerning the seizure, and that at the end, you know, that's what said, well, I assume disposition of the animal could mean the animal.
No, what was the stuff?
Mr. Chair, I think it's a suggestion I would make. These are not going to be that terribly common. I'm thinking as someone who works with animal control myself, you know, we would want, the clock is running and we want them to do something. And I don't think it would be onerous for us to say, and I don't know if this is a good statute written, but instead of saying or, send and, do all three and then add at the end of property as practical.
Where are you suggesting?
So you could say delivering a mailing to the owner by posting a copy of it at the place where the animal is taken into custody and by delivering it to the person residing on the property as practical. I don't think it's onerous to do all three, frankly. You want to know exactly what happened. But maybe as practical as two ambiguous for statute. I don't think it's unreasonable to do all three of them.
Well, the sheriffs had some concerns about making it giving them too many things to do, and they'd say, I mean, they do want to give notice, but if you add too many layers onto this, at some point somebody's going to group up and they're going to say, no, you know, they don't want to be on the hook for it. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why we originally had in the Senate bill, I think it may still be in the House bill, saying that they could do this by phone, but when you look at the list of stuff that has to be given, it's almost impossible to do this by phone. And they said, you know, and we don't want to have to tip anybody off if we have to pay. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Part of the answer to the Senator's question can be, as I say, even if you leave it as is, mm-hmm. I don't think that there will be a dereliction of notice because of all these authorities were enacted.
Right.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the final question I would have is on page 7 then. Second line 14, we have grant H. It is a person from whom a dangerous regulated animal is seized, which animal is in custody under the subdivision may prevent. And that again seems like it's such a grammatical problem.
Mm-hmm.
Which animal is that little sort of an incomplete phrase or
You're correct. I'm trying to read through how it can be reconstructed to make it look better. A person from whom it was seized.
Do you want to say on line 15 sort of which animal and the animal is in custody as provided under the subdivision?
And?
Okay. And the
so strike which and insert and, is that what's suggested?
And the.
And the.
Animal is in custody. Okay. And instead of under the subdivision, maybe as provided.
Mr. Chairman, there might be another alternative that would be on the side-by-side page R5,
mm-hmm.
House side 7.4 to 7.9 is a revised way of the concept.
R5, 7.4 to 7.9. Okay, what do you think about that?
Mr. Chairman, it's a lot easier to read.
Okay. So Senator Skady moves that on page 7 that lines 14 through 19 be deleted and that we insert the language from the side-by-side R5 lines 7.4 through 7.9. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay.
And final question.
Secretary.
back to that question of dangerous, can you help me understand how, I think this started out as an exotic animal bill, is that not the term of use, common use?
We've referred as Secretary Skane as the exotic animal bill, although it only refers to three types, bears, primates, and certain members of the cat, the Faladay family. I mean, it, generically referring to as an exotic animal, but there's many other types of exotic animals, so that's probably a misnomer. Ultimately, as I say, the Senate came up with the language prohibited animal because we were actually trying to prohibit it. The House used the term regulated animal. And Senator Dill, of course, raised the same point. Does dangerous regulated animal really describe it, or is it a better way to term? I don't know, but that's where it came out, at least in draft here.
Mr. Chairman.
I know on this was taken up in the House Ag, and Chairman Harder had talked about that, and she wanted that change from dangerous to regulated, and I know this was one of the deals that we had talked about on the House Part 2 was using regulated, because that indicates that it was
Well, Mr. Chairman, the way I would look at it is we're trying to regulate a bunch of animals out there, some of which are not dangerous. For people's pets, they like to interact with them and feed them and love them and hug them and so forth. So you've got the regulated animals that are dangerous and those that are not dangerous. Mm-hmm. And on the domestic livestock side, you do have a lot of animals that are potentially dangerous, like bulls and untrained horses, and as a veterinarian, I get stepped on and kicked and bit and all kinds of things. There's all kinds of dangerous animals to deal with out there. So I really don't like that adjective, because in my view, we're regulating some animals that are dangerous and some that are not dangerous, but we're kind of suggesting by that terminology they're all dangerous.
Okay. Is there an idea or suggestion nobody's got?
Well, why can't we just delete the word dangerous as it feels throughout the document?
Okay, is that your
motion? I'll make an motion.
Senator Dodell moves that where the term dangerous appears throughout this draft, that the word dangerous regulated, okay, where the word dangerous regulated appears through the draft, the word dangerous be stricken and that it only say regulated. Or regulated animal, I guess.
Just use the word regulated, and that is consistent with the Humane Society's recommendation here.
Okay, so the term would be regulated animal throughout the draft. Is that your desire?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. The motion of Senator Dill is that wherever the term dangerous regulated animal appears in this draft, that the word dangerous be stricken and only be referred only as regulated animal. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion fails, and the motion is adopted. Okay. All right. Just one cleanup matter, members, is that, and Mr. Knopf pointed this out to me, if you look at the bottom on page 4, line 36, the suggestion was made, even though this is identical language in both bills, we may want to clarify it. It says, if the escape of the regulated animal is due to a criminal act or a natural event, then there's nothing liability. I think we have to be careful to make sure the criminal act is of another person or another, rather than the criminal act of the owner. Because if the owner is responsible for the problems, of course the person should be held liable. But if it was a criminal act caused by someone else, then I think the intent was not to hold the person who possesses the dangerous or the regulated animal, not to hold them liable if it's a criminal act of a different person, but not to excuse the liability if the actual possessor caused the criminal act. Do you understand that? So I think the suggestion was to add the words after the word criminal act, add the words of another, just to clarify. Does that work with counsel to clarify that part?
Mr. Chairman, you can see I have another word of another person. Either way is fine.
Okay. Representative Serrano, do you have any preference as to how on this one, or is it something that do you agree with?
this particular point?
That is disagree.
Okay.
I should say another person.
Okay. Representative Murphy moves that on page 4, line 36, afterward at, insert the words, of another person. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman,
sir,
just one point on the natural event exemption. I've got that in state law elsewhere as it relates to potential pollution caused by a flea block, because you've got situations where you've got flooding or tornadoes or things that happen that you have no control over. And it just doesn't seem appropriate to call these people into court because of something like that that happened. The tornado down in St. Peter's, for example, where you know, the tornado came through and picked up all the manure out of the lagoon and dropped it off someplace and throw down buildings. And it just seemed like it was a good exemption to have them all there as well as here.
All right. Are there, you said you have some things that you want to go through. I just want to make sure there are any members have any questions that they wanted to go through before we went through some of your comments. Mr.
Chairman, I don't know if you wanted to deal with the issue that Senator Skaden
brought up. Why don't
we do that? On page 5 on the language and the wording of that, at least to do this part, to on line 6 and 7, delete everything after the H paren, and then on line 6 and line 7, delete everything before if, and then on line 12 after the period, insert this paragraph, does not apply to a regulated animal transported to a licensed veterinarian.
Could you read that again?
Sure. On page 5, line 12 after the period, insert this paragraph does not apply to a regulated animal transported to a licensed veterinarian. So you basically got the same concept. It's a little easier to read than this. You start out on paragraph H with the if requested by a local animal control authority, the person may not move.
Well, Senator Skaden, does that work for you?
That's
fine. Okay, Senator Skaden moves the language as read by counsel. Is there discussion on that? Hearing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Let me double check to make sure if any members have any other questions or comments on any parts of this draft. As I say, Representative Strong has some things that he did want to go through here. So, any other questions?
There is one other draft here, and that is on page 2, line 8.
Page 2, line 8.
We have picked the Senate version of 90 days.
Correct.
The House version of 120 days. The Humane Society's suggestion here, they're not really making a suggestion between the two numbers, actually, but they're saying that at the speed the USDA moves, you may have trouble getting a permit within 120 days. So maybe we could just give them an extra 30 days.
Well, these are the people who currently have permits. They just have to make sure they're in compliance with the standards. Well, Mr. Knox?
I'm not sure that they necessarily have a permit, but it doesn't say that they have to get a permit. The way I understand how this reads is they have to come into compliance with regulations promulgated by them for dangerous regulated animals, but not necessarily obtain a permit.
It looks like if they do sign up with their local animal control authority and they meet three components of the rules, then they should be okay.
They don't, but Mr. Chairman, again, Mr. Reagan, they don't need to have a permit. This doesn't say that they have to have
That's
a permit.
Correct.
It just says that they have to be in compliance.
That's correct.
Does that take your name, Mr. Chairman? Okay.
Well, I think it's okay. I'm interested in more flexibility and more room to maneuver. And so I thought that was one thing we could do. But what they mentioned here is that due to the slow pace of USDA work, it's unlikely that an applicant will be able to be licensed within 90 days. But they're saying they don't have to be licensed, they have to be in compliance.
Okay. Any other questions?
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
Senator Gill, I think we should just, when the legislation is passed, we'll send it to USDA and expect them to be in compliance with our law within 120 days.
We got 90 days in this draft. Oh,
90 days.
Yeah.
We'll have to tell them that.
The House has 120, but we have 90.
We'll have to tell them that. Whatever it is.
Okay.
Don't communicate with the USDA. How can you help it?
Just one thing on page 4, lines page 4, lines 10 through 13. It says here, it says, you know, why do you maintain records for the life of the animal when USDA only requires 3 years and the House bill requires 5? I mean, if you sell the animal, then are you still required to maintain the records, or?
I believe USDA does require the life of the animal.
They told me, when I met them, that as long as you have the animal on the farm,
I see.
You have possession of the animal, you can maintain the records.
Okay.
So yeah, if you sell it, it's not the life of the animal.
It says for the life of the animal. So actually what we're telling them here is that if you do sell it, you still have to take it. I mean, this has to be clarified because...
Mr. Chairman, it does say a person who possesses a dangerous animal, and once it's sold, you don't possess it anymore.
Mr. Chair, I would admit that was a little confusing.
Yeah,
clarify that a little bit better.
Okay, must be. Well, if we said nothing, if we didn't say 5 years or the life of the animal, it says a person, would it say a person who possesses a dangerous animal must maintain health and ownership records on each animal?
Mr. Chair.
Well, I mean, if the last clause were removed, it would mean if you have an animal, you have to have health and ownership records. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, would it work to just say during the time of possession instead of
while in possession?
While in possession? Where would that language go?
It would just, Mr. Chairman, it would on line 12, delete for the, and then delete life of the animal, and just insert while in possession.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I'm sorry. What about one of our guys? What do you want?
Sure. Well, if somebody wants to respond to this one, that's an issue. Go ahead. Yeah, anybody here who's
what do you
want to weigh in on this
one?
You need to identify yourself.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Are we talking about this issue here?
This issue, maintaining records. The House says for 5 years, the Senate says for the life of the animal. The proposal is while the animal is in possession. Okay. Does that seem okay? Good.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, you need to identify yourself. Yeah. Your name?
Kevin Vogel.
Okay.
Are we talking about possession? Sometimes I place animals in other parts of zoos, so I mean I own them, but they're at a different facility. Now I know how confusing this gets. Right. Possession, does that mean while it's on your farm, or what if I own this animal? Sure. It's in Texas?
Well, page 1, lines 19 to 20, define possession as to own, care for, have custody of, or control. Mm-hmm. So if it falls in one of those categories, that's possession.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dillon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just thinking about how things work in veterinary medicine, and there's animals that get sold, and sometimes you need to trace it back to the previous owner to find out what the vaccination history was, or whatever, microchipped, or when it was born, or different reports and health history on it, and if the records get destroyed at the time the animal is sold, or could potentially get destroyed at that time because we don't need to keep them anymore. It doesn't seem quite appropriate to me. It just seems like it should be, maybe the records, the health records should go with the animal when it's sold, or somehow there should be.
So there should be a transfer of records at the time of the change of possession.
Yeah, either that or if something happens, you know, we have a tiger that bites a kid, and we're going to destroy the tiger and check its brain to see if it's got rabies. I know we don't vaccinate tigers for rabies, but you know, there could be something like that. We must be able to trace it back and see what really happened during the tiger's life in terms of its health history.
So, still Sardil, I mean, if we added the, if we struck the life of the animal to 5 years and just said while in possession, what are the subsequent sentences that says that, you know, records must be transferred upon change of possession, something along those lines, would that accomplish that?
That would, or they should be, or the animal could be living for a period of time, whatever time would be appropriate. I know it says 5 years in here, but...
You know, 5 years might be too long or too short.
Maybe,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
if animals... If humans, the provider maintains records. If animals, the owner and the provider, the health provider, the veterinarian, maintains records. Am I correct? I don't know that. I said before that question to Senator Bill or others. You know, the question here is, if you need to be able to go back and see complete medical records, do they really even exist?
They do on some farms, and some farms they don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman,
Turkey's game.
Maybe the Senate was right that if you possess an animal, you must maintain the records for the life of the animal. Because if the concern is that the animal might transmit a disease, I'm searching here. I'm struggling, but it just seems to me maybe for the life of the animal was the best solution.
Presumably, if you're going to possess, if the ownership is going to change with the animal, if you've got to maintain it for the life of the animal, there should be some paper following the law. Somebody would have to ask, I guess. Representative Murphy?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to say, though, that the person, if the person sold the animal or right. transferred the animal to someone else, they wouldn't have the access to the records anymore. So they couldn't. So we have to transfer the health records with the animal when the animal changes possession, it seems to me.
So that would cut for some. I mean, if we kept the language as it is for the life of the animal, but then had a sentence that if the ownership has changed, that the paperwork somehow has to change too. Is that, would that accomplish that? Mm-hmm. So,
Mr. Chair, I would suggest we on line 12 after animal records on each animal, comma, and must transfer the records to subsequent possessors. And delete the rest. That seems pretty clear to me. I think, Senator Dill, you want a little higher standard for these types of animals for record keeping, and the possessor is responsible for transferring the records if they give it to somebody else or sell somebody else.
I want to make sure counsel has it, because I understand on page 4, line 12, after the word animal, you would insert a comma, and then after the word must, you would transfer. Transfer records to subsequent
possessors.
Period, and then strike the rest of it. Does that make sense, counsel?
Mr. Chairman, you may want to add a little flexibility by saying subsequent owner or possessor in this case.
Owner or possessor?
Well, thanks.
Okay. Well, Chairman, you can. The key there, though, is we do define possess, and it's whoever has the control of the animal.
Yeah, which includes ownership, I guess.
Yeah.
Except that he said sometimes he owns animals, but he doesn't have them under his charge.
Chairman, my understanding is, I remember it, that you'd want to have that animal, you'd want to have the records be with who's ever possessing the animal at the time. In case there was a fighter in this case or whatever.
Mr. Berlinger? Mr. Vogel.
One of the things is that when we sell animals, and Senator Dill is probably aware of this, that you know every animal that we sell has to be accompanied by a health paper. Mm-hmm. So in general essence, wouldn't that pretty much, if the animal is healthy at the time of the sale, I mean, wouldn't that pretty much take care of the problem? I mean, it's you can't sell an animal and if it's healthy and then 6 years later it develops rabies. You know, that's not my problem, or it's not who's ever selling it. So when in essence, a general health paper at the time of sale just pretty much take care of this problem.
Well, is Mr. Wolf, I don't know, is the health paper done by custom? Is it done by rule, regulation, requirement?
It's required, Mr. Chairman. It's required to sell an animal out of state. It's required by the Board of Animal Health of that state. The health paper is issued by a licensed veterinarian. And let's just say I want to move a prohibited animal, well, a regulated animal into, let's just say, Iowa. My veterinarian has to call the Board of Animal Health in Iowa and obtain an importation permit number. And Iowa requires that primates have a TB test. So before this animal could go into Iowa, there would have to be a negative TB test done on this primate before it could even go into Iowa.
The problem, of course, is that this bill doesn't affect Iowa. You know, this is within the state of Minnesota. So. Senator Dill, maybe.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the health paper you're talking about is basically a physical exam and this test as the animal appears at this point in time. So in terms of the health history of the animal going back a few years, that's not included with the paper, is it?
No.
So I think what we're talking about here is only selling an animal to Iowa rather than have a paper from a vet that says the animal's healthy today. Why not just throw in the rest of the, or a copy of the rest of the paper is based, you know, the health history of the animal for the last, however long you owned it, and send it down to Iowa along with the current health paper. Is that, you think that's okay?
I mean, it's a little, you know, it's a little extra work, but we're willing to work with each other,
Well, this provision was in the House bill, which I think we like better than the Senate bill.
Okay. Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I think that the ownership history is also very important, right. And that's not on the health record that Mr. Vogel's talking about.
Representative Lindgren?
I was referencing a document from the Minnesota Humane Society, and one observation they make to this subject is that the lifetime health record and ownership record is also needed to determine if an appropriate replacement panel is required. So it has more than just the health issue, it's also related to the replacement animal question that the bill addresses another way. So the health records become the basis for the animal control officer to make that determination.
Well, we have the motion by Representative Strawn to have the amendment on page 4, line 12, after the word animal, comma, and write M must transfer benefit to subsequent owners or possessors?
Transfer the record.
Transfer the record.
Mr. Chairman. If we've got a question, I own the animal today. I sold it to Representative Murphy. Now I've got a replacement animal. The animal control officer has to determine if I've replaced the animal appropriately. I also have to have records to prove that I've done the replacement appropriately. That's how I understand the comment from the Humane Society. So I think there's two levels of need here with the regulation we're putting in place. According to their comments,
we
suggest lifetime.
Oh, transfer a copy of.
But the original possessor or owner should maintain a copy and then transfer the score because you've got two levels of regulatory need.
If we had it, if we said transfer a copy of,
Mr. Chairman, I think the issue is that the original possessor has to maintain records lifetime, but they also have to transfer records to the subsequent owners, so that if we're looking to say that I replaced my animals appropriately, I have records to show what I sold as well as what I replaced. That's why I understand the
so does side. Okay, does the language work?
Is there someone from the society here?
I think I can phrase that if I understand what you're saying. We're getting complexer.
Go back
to the original language, life of the animal, period. If the animal is sold, comma,
Okay, so we're throwing the other one with this.
Well, let me just run this by him.
Sure.
Senator Castillo.
Okay.
The animal is transferred to another possessor, comma. A copy of the records must be transferred, period. Records must be maintained for the period during which the animal was possessed. Because you want them to keep the records, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm reading from a document, and I'm in dangerous ground here because, as you know, I haven't worked this bill through for the whole session.
And remember, we got a letter dropped off, I think, in my office today. I mean, we didn't distribute a packet because I hadn't even read the thing, but it was from the Federated Society or something. And they added a couple of thoughts on the bill, but I didn't decide anywhere myself.
Well, Mr. Chairman, here's the observation they made. To this subject, currently the language, the way they had it originally, is a person who possesses a regulated animal must maintain health and ownership records on each animal and must maintain the records for 5 years. Okay, that was the, I believe, the House language originally. Is that correct? The House says 5 years. The Senate says lifetime of the animal. We suggest lifetime if the local animal control officer is going to be able to use the records to determine if an appropriate replacement animal is required. So there's two levels of regulatory interest. One is related to the animal's health and any subsequent consequences. And one is related to the regulation of the sanctuary or the owner of regulated animals to make sure they're replacing appropriately.
Mr. Chair, so would it resolve it then if after the word life of the animal, comma, and for 5 years, following the transfer of the animal to another possessor?
The point is that the possessor should, according to their suggestion, the possessor should maintain the records of the animal, the health records of the animals that they own, the owner. Maybe it's the difference is, that the original language said health and ownership records. And it says here health and ownership records. So what the health records need to be transferred, the ownership records need to be maintained.
Is that your
point? Maybe I'm getting a little confused here. I mean, if I sold you the animal, how am I going to keep track of what you did to vaccinate or whatever? But I understand that I would have to keep a record of what I had done to the animal up to that point, and then just maintain that record until that animal died. But I don't have to keep asking you what you have done to maintain the health of that animal. Is that correct? Is that,
Mr. Chairman, I'm really sorry about this. But let me. There's two things: ownership records and health records. The ownership records are necessary for the animal control officer because we're limiting how many animals you can own to make sure that when you sell an animal, you replace it appropriately. So the owner needs to maintain the ownership records for a long time. The health records, I agree, once you no longer possess the animal, you don't need those records. So we're regulating on the health of animals wherever they are, but we're regulating on ownership based on the location and what you've owned over the course of your business. So maybe we need to, maybe there's not a problem here, but the Humane Society was saying that the owner needs to maintain records forever for the purpose of regulating the amount and scope of the animals that they're allowed to own.
Mr. Chairman,
I think we're in the right track here. If I understand the center, what he's saying, it's just that you're not to destroy the records after you sell the animal. Isn't that kind of what they're saying here? Is you just maintain the records in your records and don't get rid of them? So you do have proof of ownership and whatever. I don't know. Maybe that.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to add one thing. I mean, it does say in paragraph C, as you talked about this earlier, that they do have to notify them whenever there's a change in address or location. So they are notified whenever an animal leaves the site. And so they will know if there's been a change in possession. Because paragraph B only, or excuse me, paragraph A only applies to the person who possesses the animal. Once you don't possess the animal anymore, you're not subject to that requirement.
That'll sound good. Well, I'm just wondering if we could just leave the sentence as it is. The person who possesses a dangerous or regulated animal must maintain health and ownership records on each animal and must maintain a register of the life of the animal.
Right.
And then add the sentence, if the animal is sold, it's not to the record, must be taken care of.
Sir, could you repeat that?
If the animal is sold, a copy of the records must be given to the new owner.
Well, I don't know. Sold may not be the right word because, you know, I mean, there might be something else, a gratuitous transfer or something. But if the possession is transferred, then the record has to be transferred as well.
Okay. Can I just say that?
Well, let's see if maybe council can identify some words here. We're going to a little bit here to clear something up. I just remember joint Senate House Senate rules do require that a conference committee cannot go beyond 11 p.m. So just to alert you about that. Yeah, we're going to be done. But just so you don't think we're going to go through some of the morning because the rules do not allow us to do that. So.
Mr. Chair, I think if we accepted Senator Dill's change in text, I believe that under Subdivision 8 on page 8, the report to the board along with the previously mentioned notification, if there's a change, may result the ownership records that Senator Kiskaden refers to. Just an idea.
There's a report that goes to the board. All registration information, I mean, it may just say we've got four tigers in our area and three monkeys and so forth. Do we have any suggestions?
Mr. Chairman, I think perhaps a suggestion.
Yes.
That would be to leave the existing language as it is from lines 10 through line 13.
Okay.
And after the period on line 13, add this new sentence. And I'll just read it fast once and then slower again. If the animal is transferred to another person, a copy of the records must accompany the animal.
Could you read it again?
If the animal is transferred to another person, a copy of the records must accompany the animal.
Same deal, does that work? Okay. Sardell moves the language as read by council. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails and votes adopted. Any other questions, Strong? Did you have any other things that you wanted to bring up? I do want to give the public members who are here to testify too before we. I want to see get the concerns raised by the members.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I had a motion, but you withdraw that. I will. Mr. Chair, these are, and again, these are not my concerns necessarily, but those that have been brought to me.
Okay.
I'm continually trying to be as reasonable as I can as the author of this bill.
I'm sure you are.
Under page 2, line 25, I think this is more just a question because it says, standards on the effective date of this section may, et cetera, et cetera. Is that in conflict or is it ambiguous as it relates to section B, which specifically gives 90 days? And I guess the concern that was brought to me was, are those two things, section B says 90 days, section E talks about the effective date of the section. So, are those two different standards, or are we talking about two different sets of compliance?
Well, Section E says the person who possesses the permit and is in compliance on the effective date may breed, purchase, and so forth. And you're saying B, a person who possesses, has 90 days to come into compliance with the permit. So you're saying that this may be an internal inconsistency. here? Is that what you're...
Yeah, and just to clarify, Mr. Chair, sure. is Section B pertaining then to those who we would consider to be pets, and Section E refers to what we would consider to be commercial or breeder operators? Is that... Am I accurate?
I'm getting a bunch of nods. Apparently, okay. that's how it is okay. interpreted.
So does that make sense to everybody?
I don't know.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is my understanding is in paragraph E, we're talking about people who are already licensed and they should be in compliance with the regulations to be licensed.
As opposed to B, where if you've got the permit but you're not in compliance now, you better get in compliance.
Okay. Right. And with B, these people may not have, generally don't, this is to make sure that those people who aren't licensed now at least come into compliance with those regulations within that time period. Okay.
Does that answer question?
It does.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
If I could go on to the next one.
Go ahead.
Page 4, line C.
Page 4, line C.
In the House version, there was specific fee schedule set so that the local animal control authority couldn't...
Which C? We've got a couple of C's.
I'm sorry. Line 7. Line 7.
Line 7.
I should say line 7.
Okay, what page? Okay, page 4. Right. And if, yes. Okay, go ahead.
And in the House version, we did have an actual fee schedule so that a local animal control authority couldn't effectively price everyone out. And it needs to be reasonable to go ambiguous, so we had an actual fee schedule. And it's been brought to my attention that they would prefer a specific amount, and I personally don't think that's a bad idea.
And members on R3, if you look at the House side, 4.7 to 4.15, I think that perhaps an initial fee and annual.
Sorry. I actually prefer the Senate language much more than the House language for a number of reasons. One of them is that we don't know that these are reasonable fees that you've chosen. And we do know that when we did this last year on concealed carry, for instance, we are hearing that the fees that we chose on the basis of the advocates saying they didn't want to pay more than this, in fact, are not covering the costs. And as a result, we are finding that the law enforcement in some locations is having to move resources from other kinds of functions to issuing the permits. So we're moving away from crime investigations to issuing permits to citizens to own concealed carry permits. So that's the first objection. We don't know that these are related to actual costs. Secondly, once you put these in place, we know that over time these fees will not cover actual costs. And so we have no way other than coming back in and opening up this whole statute to adjust fees in the future. And so while people are uncomfortable with the concept of reasonable fees, I believe that in most situations those fees are going to be set by a local governing body, a city council or county board. And in my experience in Olmsted County, the county board is very open to citizen input on their fees. And whenever fees get a whack, they hear about it. So it doesn't leave some faceless bureaucrat deep in the bowels of Washington County in charge of horrible fees. So I think that we do have automatic regulatory mechanisms in our local units of government. And so for the reasons I've outlined, I'd much prefer to just leave the Senate language there and let citizens deal with their county board or the city council if for some reason those fees are not reasonable.
Mr. Chairman. The only challenge that I see with that is that there is no continuity in what's going on. There is Olmsted County might charge $100 and Clearwater County might charge $500. I would propose, to do something like the senator had an idea. Why don't we install the House language and with those fees, and then if need be, in a year, come back and readdress that. Here we do have some fees set down that it is statewide, and everybody's going to be charging the same amount. We can go up on that.
Just to clarify, in order to adopt anything for a conference committee, it takes a majority vote on each side. So it would take two votes from the House, two votes from the Senate to put anything in, take anything out. I mean, that's how we're working off a proposed draft, so it's a little bit different here, but that's, in order to adopt anything, it has to have approval from the majority of both bodies. It could be, who suggested a reasonable fee to cover costs?
Mr. Chairman, just when Senator Kincaid was talking about this, you're talking about covering the costs, and one idea was to insert after fee to cover the costs of registration and enforcement of the section. So in other words, to cover the cost of the local government.
So they can't create a slush fund just by using this and charging. I mean, you know, that certainly, I think, gets what is. Because I don't know if the fees that were proposed by the House are too high or too low, but I think we would certainly want to make sure that they are in line and they are for that purpose and no other purpose. I think probably agree on that. What's the pleasure? Senator
Dell. Mr. Chairman, looking at it from the standpoint of the producer, if you're the only producer in the county and somebody's going to get geared up to inspect that one facility, it's going to take time to understand the regulations and go out there and do your thing. And then if you got another county where you got, say, 10 producers, and you've got 10 people to inspect, or another one, you've got 25 to inspect, it's going to be less costly probably because you're already geared up and know what you're doing. So from the standpoint of protecting the producer, I think they would probably prefer the House version where there's some protection. And I see them nodding their head over there. So I guess...
Well, sir, this game.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bill, if you are a county that you have to go out and inspect, let me ask this question. Am I understanding that this would apply to any kind of site, so it would include Little Falls Zoo? So some sites may be really, have many facets to inspect. Other sites you might have very few animals, and it's very easy to inspect. And you're now setting up a fee that's arbitrary based on $50, an annual fee of $25 per animal to register. I just don't know that, that some of those sites are, I understand the concern from the producer's point of view or the owner's point of view, but I just don't think this works very well when we pick a figure out of here.
Chairman, I think the way that they did come up with this is that, the DNR game farm has fees and things like that, and these fees that we have come up with in the House language are higher than what the DNR, charges, on their game farms and stuff like that. So there is a basis to this. This number just was not picked out of the air. There was a basis for this. So, it would be something to work from.
I do have one question, though. The House language does cap it off at a maximum of $100 annually per person. What if the person has lots and lots and lots of animals? I mean, shouldn't you be able to, why do we cap it off at $100? If $50 for initial one and $25 is appropriate and they have a lot of animals, shouldn't they pay that?
Mr. Chairman, why don't we just bump it up to $250? I mean, that's 2.5 times that.
I don't know. I guess the first question is why a cap, and second, if we're going to have one, is $100 sounds a little low to me for something that has multiple animals. I don't know what the pleasure of the conference committee is so far on the House versus Senate versus the cap. So, any suggestions or ideas?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion if you want to hang up. lawsuit on 4.10, $250 for $100.
Okay. Representative Swan has moved that we delete the language, page 4, lines 10 through, seven through nine, insert the House language, I'll be side by side, R3, House language 4.7, 2.4, 4.15, with the exception of 4.10 change, maximum 100, annual to 250 annual. Discussion on that motion.
Mr. Chairman, some of these producers have traveled a long way to be here, and it's only 15 minutes till shutdown time. I wonder if they give us a chance to come.
Do they have any thoughts on this one? Anybody want to call in on it? Identify yourself
for record. Through like myself, I have also deer and things, and through that program, a farmer can have, I have 5 deer. So I have to pay $10 per year to have them come out and spend. I'm doing a comparison.
Right.
Okay, I have 8 or 9 prohibited or regulated animals.
Right.
At that point, I would be paying the $250 per animal. But my neighbor who had my neighbor who has 80 elk has a cap of $100 to have all them 80 elk inspected. How is there any equalness to that? I mean, you know, they're out inspecting many more head of those programs, and we're, you know, $250 is a pretty high figure, I think.
Mr. Chairman, wouldn't the person with the 80 off or whatever, they'd still be capped at 250?
Well, I have a motion before us.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say, I certainly respect your opinion, sir, and I'm simply trying to reach some compromise with Senator Christine's concerns. I have a good answer to them.
Further discussion. On the motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Aye. Motion prevails.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman.
Come down.
I would like to try this. I'd like to try to see what happens. I'd like to try to amend. I'd like to move to amend the motion that we just passed to delete the 250 and insert 100.
Okay. That's allowed. Is there discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chip, we're voting only on the
100. Senator Dill now wants to basically change the 100, the $250 cap, which we've adopted, to change that up to a $100 cap.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I really would make it consistent with the DNR cap on inspecting game farms.
Okay, Senator Bill's made that motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Hearing none. Senator Murphy, Representative.
Have we got any from that other, from last year's legislation which set inspection of elk at 100? Do we have any knowledge of if that's been an adequate amount of money or not? Because I totally agree with what Senator Kiskaden said, and I've heard from both my counties about that the amount of money that we're collecting for the concealed carry is not enough or not going to be enough 2, 3, 4 years down the line to maintain the
I think we can
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, they also received the general fund appropriation for it because the fee was not enough to cover the cost of Board of Animal Health and regulate conservative industry.
So, we're not getting any money from the general fund to maintain this, so I think we would be wiser to keep the $250 in there.
Discussion on the motion. Hearing the whole circus gate.
I just want to point out that we can't keep imposing requirements on local units of government. When we put levy limits on them, when we don't fund them, and when we're cutting them, the local government needs another. So while I'm really sympathetic to the producers, we really do have a problem. It's a broader problem, and I'm really sticking up for local units of government and not agreeing with the suggestion.
Further discussion.
Hearing none, all those in favor of the Dill motion, please indicate by saying aye. Aye. Can you say no?
No.
The motion is not prevailed.
Any other questions for members? I want to give the members of the audience. If you want to, we're running out of time, obviously, if anybody else has any other issues, we do need to have you identify yourself for the record. Anybody else who wanted to bring anything to the discussion?
We're not allowed to have people come to the table.
If you would like to speak to address the conference committee, you can get to a microphone and talk to us. Does anybody else have anything they want to bring to our attention at this time?
Mr. Chair, just one of the commercial individuals just asked me a question that I'd like to help him get it answered. And I think it's on page 2 under lines 33 to 36.
Okay.
Just to make sure we're all on the same page, the Senate language is in this agreement. It allows a commercial operation to not count as its cap offspring of animals under 6 months of age as of the date of enactment. The House language that talked about 125% is now missing from the bill. Is that correct?
Right. There were differences in the approaches from the House and the Senate. I believe that the Senate is more favorable to the persons who are selling because we specifically exclude offspring under 6 months of age, whereas if you look at the House language, it's 125%, but it doesn't deal with offspring. So I think that people who have an interest in this would probably like to send on the Senate.
Mr. Chairman, I think you said offspring on the date of enactment, but if any offspring in perpetuity.
For the first 6 months.
Yeah, for the first 6 months.
Of the offspring, yeah.
But it's not... It doesn't tie in. It's tied into the number on the date of enactment, but it does allow offspring.
So, Mr. Chair, just to clarify that, the 125% language is gone. However, offspring under 6 months of age do not count in the cap and can be transferred.
Ever. That's right. Correct.
For in perpetuity.
Okay. Chair.
Your name again, sir?
Jim Fisker. I'm sorry.
Fisker. Okay.
My question is, okay, I'm a small person who's been trying to build and grow. At present time I have one bear, right. I have one lion. My future plans was that next year I would receive my second bear. And now at this point I have one animal. I may not have another bear, so I will never be able to take that animal and breed it. Is that correct?
Well, the DNR governs the bears.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
Correct.
So that would have to be within the permit of the DNR, not necessarily under this. If the DNR limits you to one bear, that's what the DNR permit is.
Sure. Jim Pusserf, let's then talk about my African lion. I have one female African lion.
Right.
If I have some primates, if I eliminate one of my other animals, then may I purchase another lion?
Yes. Everybody's on their head, yes.
So, okay. Good. Sure.
You can't go over the number that you have. You're still capped off at the number, but the different species you can make the replacement as long as you don't now have go from 2 to 8. Okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead. You need
to answer that, Mr. Vogel. To answer Mr. Seth, Representative Lingard's question earlier, okay, about, like, say, the Little Falls Zoo with this inventory cap. They have, I believe, 2 tigers up there, and let's just say in 3 years from now we want to add some lions. They would not be able to do this. They are no more exempt from this bill than I am or Carl Holstrom is. And also, to bring into a point, on page 2, around line 24, just so that the members of this committee understand that if this would go through, there would be no new people that would be allowed into this business. And those people in the state who may be breeders, what are you supposed to do with your offspring? And you're killing an industry, and I just remember at the hearings, when we were at the hearings, all the senators and the representatives were all saying that we are not going to put honest, hardworking people out of business, and in fact, that's exactly what would happen.
Well, Mr. Vogel, I think both the House and the Senate, we had extensive hearings in both bodies and debates on the floors of both bodies, but the sense is that, you know, and one option would have been just simply let anybody do it as long as they register. You know, no regulation by the government. And I think both legislative bodies made a determination that we want to start phasing out the breeding, the ownership of a limited number of animals, the bears, the primates, the certain number of the valid animal, animals. And yes, ultimately, you know, that's the direction that I think the state seems to want to go into. Okay. Further discussion? Anybody else want to hear? Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wonder how the House feels about their language here. As I understand it, the House language only applies to lions and tigers as it relates to one-time replacement. And you're allowing for multiple replacement on smaller kittens. Is that right?
I believe the House did not. They limited it. I think it reflects on the bill. If you look at page R2, line 3.19, they limited it to the replacement of lions and tigers, but apparently the primates and other members of the Faraday family, you could have, as I read the language, unlimited replacements. Whereas the Senate, for the regulated animals, as you can see on Senate language 318 to 322, that a possessor may replace the animal once.
So Mr. Chairman, if I have a monkey under the house language, I can replace it multiple times.
Yes.
But under the Senate language, I can only replace it once.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure, maybe it's health staff or somebody can point out, I don't know where you replace if you're not a USDA facility in the health side, because to me the paragraph F is where it's the paragraph that deals with replacement. And so I'm not sure that you could replace a monkey under the health language, unless somebody could point that out to me.
So it might be more restrictive.
It might be more.
Okay.
Unless somebody knows where that,
yeah,
another place where that would be.
So in other words, there might be no replacement period, but you can do the lion or tiger once. So. That's a different interpretation of that. Okay, sure.
Because the disease.
Okay, so actually the Senate language might be more generous to allow more replacements of these animals. Circus game.
Long ago when I was working on this, long ago, the concern that was expressed was about primate to primate disease transmission, monkeys to animals to humans. And so the recommendation had been that we curtail any importation or allowing anyone to have primates as pets. And so the original bill, I believe, would have prohibited replacement. So the Senate has moved to allowing you, if you have a monkey as a pet now, a primate as a pet, that you could replace it.
And originally, the bill was introduced, did not provide for replacements. Those were positions that both the committees in the House and the Senate opted to have a replacement, but an unlimited one.
Mr. Chair, if we don't have time for this, I won't offer it, but one of the questions we had was to clarify that a business owner can sell that business, and it's ambiguous according to Mr. Wang in the current version. It may or may not be a litigation could result, so if you would entertain it, I would make the motion to change. You can insert this. It simply says, person legally possessing regular animals shall not be prohibited from selling or transferring real personal property, including regular animals, to another person, and that they must comply within not later than 120 days following the transfer. And I guess I would just ask Mr. Rankin, Mr. Chair, if he thinks it's necessary to clarify that or anything like this.
Mr. Rankin?
Mr. Chair and committee members, it seems like it would be incredibly difficult, if not impossible, with the language we have now, for anyone to get started in the business or to get their first animal, which is one of these restricted animals. That's my interpretation of reading the bill.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, is it impossible, though, for a business owner who currently owns 10 animals to sell them? Is it ambiguous that they can sell their business, okay, to another person, or are they able to do this under the bill as it says?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Representative Strand, they can sell them to someone already qualified and within the limits that are not exceeding the caps of their ownership.
This is not necessary.
Not necessary. Okay. We are at the time when we got to start wrapping up. You're up to Murphy.
I'm ready to wrap up, but I have a question.
Sure.
On page 4, when we're talking about the sign, the people bring their lines and tiger into their home. And they have a structure where they keep their lion and tiger sometimes, mm-hmm. Then as I read this, the home would also have to have a sign on it.
Representative Murphy, the Senate talked about the interest to the property. I think the house language, and I'm trying to find it, referred specifically to the enclosure where the animals kept. This is sort of in between.
Mm-hmm. So and it says prominently display, and so that means it has to be a pretty big sign? Or
well,
nice
we weren't as specific as the kids seal carry type of sign.
Well, that might be prominent.
Okay.
Well, I wish you would,
okay.
Actually. Yeah. But I didn't win on that one. But I'm concerned that if they're moving their animal, like if it's a pet and they're bringing it from where the animal lives on a regular basis, but it's still a pet and plays with the kids and all that at their home, then would there be a sign on their home as well? So that when I go door knocking, I go.
That's a very good question. As I read it, the structure of the animal's house, so if you have the animal in a barn or have the animal inside the house or whatever the structure is, has to have the sign on it so you know that the animal's on the other side of the door. That's also important for firefighters and police. I mean, if there's an emergency, before they kick down the door and go in, I think they may want to know if it's on the other side.
Mr. Chairman, isn't there a question, however, if you usually have a pen in back of the house for your large cat?
Right.
But you occasionally bring the cat in to play with the kids.
That's
a very interesting thought. I know
what happens?
Do you have to have a sign on the front of your house as well as on the enclosure where the animal is domiciled?
It would really make me feel bad.
Is there a suggestion, Representative Murphy, or is there some way that if you're looking for something added here? I don't know.
Chairman, it does say house. I mean, you could say where the animal is located. They'd have to transfer the sign to the house if they're keeping the house at that time. And I don't know.
Does located do it better than housed
or located?
Well, for me, it's clear enough the way it is.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Let's not develop it, Mr. Chair. If they didn't put a sign on their house and a police officer or a salesperson or whatever was injured, I mean, the civil liability really sort of takes care of that. That's more of a civil liability issue, perhaps, as much as anything. Do you agree?
I would think so, but as I say, we've been working on this, and people who aren't familiar with this may be reading this and not know exactly what it says. So,
Chairman,
okay.
Are we really, because we have primates in this as well, right?
Correct.
Are we really just worried about the large cats and the bears?
No, not necessarily, no. I mean, the primates carry diseases, and they can be very aggressive. I think we're worried about all ways, shapes, and forms of these regulated animals. Representative Murphy, did you have anything else that you
The other question was on the animal, the definition of the animal control officer,
great.
Local animal control authority.
Okay.
Does every municipality, are we saying that every form of government then will have a local animal control officer, or can we say we go from the state down to the county and then to the city or the township, but the township may choose to have the county do it?
I believe
we're not saying
that. I believe each jurisdiction makes the decision, is that?
My understanding, this is actually modeled after existing law dealing with the tribe. There's the same definition in other places. We refer to animal control authorities.
Okay.
What's your pleasure? We are at the point where we must, we'd have to take a motion and approve to continue, or do you want to do that?
Mr. Rankin can make two very minor amendments.
Just very briefly, when Mr. Chairman and committee members, when we had the initial of the side-by-side, one little thing that was not noted between the difference between the House and Senate is on page R1.
R1, okay.
Line 1.10 and 1.11. There are two words that are on the House language, or three words that are on the House language that are not on the Senate language. One is in the definition of person, and it's the House language says a natural person, which we commonly use in, or very frequently use. And finally, on line 11, 1.11, however organized, makes it certain that you're wrapping up for-profit, non-profit, and any type of organization.
I think it makes sense, yeah. Representative Strawn moves the House language in those two instances. Is there a discussion on that? Hearing none, all those may please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails, the amendment is adopted. Further discussion?
I'm thinking of from the producer standpoint here. Here we've got all this regulatory stuff. We're shutting down the market. And I'm sure you're not going to be happy about what's really happening. I'm just wondering if there's some, as one goes through here with a new draft, and before we shut this thing down completely, if there's some things that could be modified slightly or tweaked or something to try to make it a little bit easier for those of you that are conscientiously in the business of producing these animals. And I know it's too late for. I guess we can vote.
Is there anything that anybody wants to bring your attention? I don't see anything at the moment. Yeah, somebody should make a motion to adopt the conference report.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Strawn moves that the A13 amendment, as amended, be adopted as the conference report. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails. All right. I don't think we need to make any motions now.
No.
We've adopted the conference report. Okay. Anything further? A couple more councilors. Okay. Circus King.
A moment
to
those who are attending, you realize that you're off asking if they want to comment.
I did ask. I hope I was clear enough on that. Of course, we're sitting behind us, so I can't always see things, but if anybody else had any comment, we're ready to wrap up now. Anybody else?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Vogel.
I guess I mentioned before, the thing with the inventory and the amount of new people and if you're basically going to be shutting us down, then what about the compensation? We're supposed to feed these animals, some of them live for another 25 years, and if we can't make any money off of them, what are we supposed to do? This is our livelihood, this is our living. So, I mean, you would not think about shutting down a dairy farm without some type of agricultural, assistance. So, if we can't produce these animals, and if we can't make no money, then if we don't take care of them, then we're under black, that we ain't got the money to feed them because we can't produce them anymore. So, I mean, it's a whole prohibition with no reimbursement. And some of these animals are very expensive. And we've got, you know, loans out against them, and it's our livelihood. So what am I supposed to do? Go down and sign up for welfare? I'll get some open for suggestions on that. If you're going to put us out of business, do you want to pay for us?
I don't know if I got a response.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is it Mr. Boyle? Do you have an out-of-state market at all? Is there an out-of-state market?
Not for what I understand.
And is that because of federal regulations?
It's just not for okay. But we're not allowed to breed, so you know, we're not allowed to breed.
Yeah, so you, don't you have a USDA?
But it is.
I think we have another gentleman who wants to make a comment.
Yeah, my name is Pete Bergerson. I have 25 years experience with exotic animals, lifetime of so-called domestic. So my personal concern in all this is that people have got to realize there's not an animal on the face of this earth that is not potentially dangerous. All we have to do is look at the annually recurring and ISMF. Horrendous, despicable, unacceptable, domestic statistics, end quote, that happen every year in this country. What concerns me with all this, and again, this is a personal thought, there is so much attention in all this, with the implications that an exotic automatically means dangerous, domestic automatically means safe. Folks, that isn't reality. What concerns me, and this is after all American, my feeling is that I personally, association agrees, that all animal ownership needs reasonable regulation. That the ownership and doing the activities with exotics requires some additional reasonable regulation. But to cast the image or the implications that a large percentage of exotic owners are irresponsible and dangerous to the public does not match reality. And I'm just concerned we're getting off on a tangent and not saying, well, because any animal can be dangerous, instead of getting so locked up in certain types of animals, isn't there a better way, regardless of animal involved, to say somehow you're either a responsible owner, you may do, or you're an irresponsible owner, and you may not?
Jim Quistar. The one thing that I guess we haven't, you know, we've talked about the prohibited, all those things, but have we looked at the trickle-down effects? I come from a town of 1,200 people. I support my local community. I also own another business in there that's farm-related. I support my local community 100%. That means I'm purchasing at the grocery store at feed for these animals, fruits, vegetables. I go to my feed store. He carries a line of special feeds that we need for exotic animals. If we're going to be limited to have no growth, to have our business pinched to nothing, it's going to affect more than just us. It's going to affect our small town. Just like, you know, it affects my business with in the farming, from the farming industry and everything. So it's not just us that's being affected. We're affecting the veterinarians, who I pay a tremendous amount of money to every year, the small town feed stores, and, you know, all the people who benefit from what we do. There is a benefit from what we do from the educational side and them types of things also. And them are also the people who you're affecting today.
Okay. Anything further? I think just as a technical point, if council finds any grammatical errors or things they need to clean up, I think we certainly authorize them to do that as part of before they present the conference Supreme Court. Mr. Ryan, I know you're leaving the legislature. It's been a pleasure working with you. Good luck to you in your future endeavor. Anything further? If nothing else, then the conference committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
I think so, but who eyes it all four on the I don't represent by leftover stuff.